Today, from PRX and NPR, Snap Judgment proudly presents The Breakout Special. Performed live in San Francisco, you get the very best seat in the house, because it's about to be on. Snap Judgment, live.
Okay, so I was a young lad living in Detroit, Michigan, enjoying myself. But my parents said, no. We're taking y'all out to the country, middle of nowhere, gonna be farmers. I didn't appreciate it, but they bribed me. And as a little kid, I got a trapper keeper, you know. I had a Scooby-Doo lunchbox, yo. I had one of those hats with the propeller on top of it. I was ready to go on the first day of school. I said, go ahead, go on to school. And I went down the driveway to wait for the school bus. This was a new thing for me, school bus. So I was out there. And I saw it coming down the road. You could hear the kids screaming, hollering, and yelling, and shouting. The school bus pulls up. Go on in here. I step in, and it goes silent. See, there weren't any black families in rural Michigan for about 100 square miles. No one had gotten the memo that one had arrived. So I just went to go sit down in the first seat I saw. It's this little toe-headed boy. And he spit in the seat. I kept walking. Spit. And I'm getting near the end of the bus. Sit yourself down, Blaze. We gotta go. Everyone's shouting. They're yelling now. You know what they're calling me. And I get all the way to the back of the bus. And I can't turn around. They're shouting, they're screaming, they're yelling. I can't turn around. It's a little girl. She has her backpack on the seat. She moves it, and I sit down, and we ride. I don't say a word to her. I don't say anything to her. We ride, go to school. The next day, the shouting, the screaming, the hollering, I go right back to the back of the bus, and Mary Jo. I know her name is Mary Jo now. Mary Jo moves her backpack, and I sit down. We do not speak. We just ride. And that's how it goes every single day until the middle of the school year, they switch things up. And instead of being the last one on the bus, now I'm the first. But force of habit, I go right back to my regular seat. Now, in rural Michigan, nobody's rich, but some of us are really, really poor. Poor farm families where you don't have enough insulation on your water makes your pipe freeze in the middle of the winter. But you still have to do your chores. You still have to clean the barn. Still have to get chicken filth all over you. And when that happens in a cold Michigan winter, you have one of two choices. You can either go to school covered in filth, or you can try to hide it with some cologne. This day, Mary Jo went the Cologne route. And when she got on that bus, it smelled like a skunk wrapped in rotten flowers. And the kids screamed and shouted and hollered. And Mary Jo, she looked right back at me. I looked away. I'd had enough. I'd had enough. I was hoping she'd find, I just hoped she'd find somewhere else to sit. But she walked back. She walked back, the hollering, the screaming, the shouting, the yelling. She walked back, and there I was, with my backpack on the seat. I waited, and I moved there. She sat down. And I was so ashamed. The hollering, the screaming, the shouting, I didn't care. I just wanted to tell her, I was sorry. So I said, hey, my name's Glenn. I know your name. What are you talking about? So, we talked. All the screaming and hollering, it just went away. We talked to two little kids in the back of the bus. Now then, I can't tell you how happy we ought to be here today. I am thrilled to come to this stage one more time with some of the best storytellers in all the land. And you might not know this, but I brought some friends. Please say hello if you would. Give a warm welcome, Mr. Alex Mandel. David Brandt on the sticks. David Brandt on the sticks. Got Tim Frick. 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 Call this one. Gonna show the breakout special. A little something, something. Now, our first storyteller tonight, this guy, he's an amazing brother. In fact, he was just nominated by the NAACP as the best playwright for a play that he wrote. He's got a current play going on at the Marsh. We're excited to have him on this stage. Please welcome Mr. Don Reed.
I grew up on East 14th in Oakland, California. When I was like 20 years old, I got recruited to UCLA on a speech and debate scholarship, a partial scholarship. But nobody told me that partial scholarship, loosely translated, actually stands for not enough money. Yeah, I was suffering bad, bad. I was really excited when I first headed off for UCLA. I hopped on a plane. Landed in L.A., starry-eyed, and realized I didn't have nowhere to live. Hadn't quite thought that part out yet, right? So what I did was, every day after class, I went to a different dorm room and I partied. Went to a different dorm room and partied every night. Party, party, party. Yeah. Dancing white to fit in. Hi, how are you? How are you doing? How are you? How are you? And crashed in a different dorm room every night. But they caught on to me. So then I slept in the movie theater, and they caught on to me. So then I got a brilliant idea to sleep in the girls' restroom at UCLA. They had those little couches, you know, those little period couches? Those little, it's my time of the month, you might back up, I might choke you couches. I sleep in those. Now, the building where the speech team met had a lot of those couches. Kinsey Hall, built in 1929 with words of wisdom etched in stone over the doorway. But I never read it. So I sneak in there and sleep, but I never got good rest because I didn't want anybody to walk in on me. So I kind of slept with one eye open all night, like... I didn't want some girl to walk in and say, Suzanne, Suzanne, there's a Negroid in the women's restroom. Alert the authorities, right? I knew I needed somewhere to live. I needed a job. So I went to the classifieds and I found an excellent opportunity. Seeking neat, clean college students to serve breakfast to the elderly in an upscale environment. Beverly Hills Hancock Park adjacent. The Kipling Hotel for your busy, friendly, happy retirement. I waited tables some up here in the Bay. I'm like, I gotta get this. I caught the bus over there. It was almost as if classical music was playing in my head as I passed luscious lawns and stunning mansions. This was going to be the next level of my life. We rode by a golf course. People waved at me. I was on the bus. But the bus went way, way past all that night. And I ended up in a nasty area with trash on the ground. Heard errant gunshots. Pow, 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 pow. Woo! Police helicopter. A little scroungy dog ran by. Looked like he gave me the finger. How do you give the finger with a paw? I stepped off the bus. And there was the Kipling in all its non-fantasticness. I walked into the lobby, and I was immediately met by the scent of urine and log cabin syrup. Kind of nasty, but kind of sweet. I went through the interview. It went well. They told me they'd let me know. They did let me know. I got it. Serving breakfast to the elderly for room and board. Now, every day after you finish your shift, you had to kind of rush through the lobby because the old folks would be camped out in the lobby and they try to capture you with a long-ass boring story. The kind that destroys your soul. The kind that, while you're listening, you go, am I dying as I'm listening to this? Did you just reference Custer? How long have you been on the planet? So you had to do this little move where you kind of jog through the lobby and point your watch like, I got things to do. I got things to do. But sometimes I just slowed down and I got to know some of them. I got to know this one old guy named George. One day he was standing in the dining room, you know, kind of Catskills type dining room with a green linoleum floor and cheap curtains that wanted to be much nicer. And George, standing there 5'2" with his little dead finger, he's like, Don, hold on just a second. I want to talk to you for a second, Don. I want to talk to you. I have a situation, and you're a smart guy. You serve me my breakfast each morning. I want to know if you think what I'm thinking about doing is a good idea, okay, Don? Okay, look over here, okay? Look right there. That's my seat. Every day, breakfast, lunch, dinner, everybody knows that that's my seat. But now there's this new guy, an old guy. He just plops in my seat. He plots in my seat. He's giving me the spilkas, this guy. This guy's giving me the spilkas, okay? Okay, I'm thinking about doing something. I want to know if you think it's a good idea, okay? I'm thinking of going up behind him and stabbing him in the back of the head with a fork. You think that's a good idea? To stab him in the back of the head with a fork. You think that? Look at him. Watch him. Watch the son of a bitch. Watch him chew. I hate that guy. I'm too old for this. I'm 92 years old, okay? My wife died 25 years ago. Every night I say my prayers. I say, dear God, when I wake up, please let me be dead. I wake up, damn it, still alive.
So how are things going for you?
I said, they're going pretty good, George, but I'm having a hard time staying in school financially, and I really just want to be a comedian.
He said, you could do that. You can go to school and be a comedian. You know, people can make it through anything. People can do anything. They're resilient. Trust me. I've been through a lot. Let me tell you a story, Don, okay? I used to live overseas. And one day, they marched into our area and they say that we're going to be prisoners of war. We're like, okay, we're going to be prisoners of war, right? But what they did, Don, is they took us to this camp. And then they tell us that we're just going to be held. Don, you see these numbers on my arm right here? He pointed to some numbers tattooed on his forearm. They put those on me there. And so one day, a soldier walks in dressed in all black, and he says, it's time to take a shower. Now, we knew some folks that headed off to these showers. We don't quite remember seeing them again. Didn't know if they were transferred. Confusing. But we change clothes. We get in line. It's almost my group's turn to walk inside these showers. And Allied soldiers, British, American, I don't know. They show up and pop, pop, pop. They shoot the guys in the black. Pop, pop, pop. They shoot the SS guys in the black. And they freed us. And that's why you'll never hear me say an ill word about a soldier that's fighting for good. They try to say all soldiers are murderers. They're all killers. But sometimes you got to do that. Sometimes you got to fight when someone's trying to wipe out your entire culture. You got to fight. You better fight. You got to fight, Don. But you don't have time to listen to all that stuff. You're real busy and you got a lot to do. I said, that's okay, George. He said, Don, did I ever tell you I had a beautiful wife? She was beautiful. She had this song. Well, I'd sing it to her. I sing the song to her. Go, da, da, da. Hold on, I got it. Hold on. Da, da, da. You are most beautiful girl in the whole wide world. You are beautiful girl. Da 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 da. It's a short song, I made it up. But Don, I tell you, I've lived a good life. I treat people well, I keep my word. That's a big thing. You gotta keep your word. You gotta keep your word, Don. But I've lived too damn long. 92 years old, every night I still say my prayers. Dear God, when I wake up, let me be dead. I wake up, damn it, still here. And you know what, Don? You know what they still give me? I'm 92. You know what they still give me? My driver's license. You better watch out for me. I'll run you right down.
I lived and worked at the Kipling for 5 years. Serving breakfast to the elderly, and they served me stories. I left the Kipling, and things went very, very well for me. Many, many years later, I got a big project working with a huge star. Her name rhymes with Mopra. I wanted to remember being hungry because things were going so well. I wanted to remember being really hungry. So what I did, I swear to God, I went back to UCLA to the very building where I used to sleep in the girls' restroom. The very building. While standing outside, I looked up and I finally looked at those words of wisdom that were etched in stone over the doorway. They say, "Nothing is too wonderful to be true." It's a quote from a scientist, Faraday. "Nothing is too wonderful to be true." And guess what's etched in stone over the doorway of the Kipling Hotel? Not that. I think it's scratching with a butcher knife. It says something like "lick my nuts" or something like that. But nothing is too wonderful to be true. It could be my old buddy George, who grew to 92 and beat the Nazis. He beat the Nazis and finally, happily, woke up dead. Or you could be me, who grew up in Oakland, headed off to college, was homeless for a while but battled through and ended up here with you on this wonderful night. Or something like that.
Snap Judgment Live. The breakout special will continue in a moment. Stay tuned. Snap Judgment is supported by ZipRecruiter. Business owners, did you know that the summer is a great time to hire the best people? With the other guys on vacation, there's less competition for quality candidates. But posting your job to one place isn't enough to find the people you need until now. Thanks to ZipRecruiter.com, you can post on 100 plus job sites with a single click. Post once, and within 24 hours, watch your candidates roll in to ZipRecruiter's easy-to-use interface. Plus, we instantly match the candidates from over 4 million resumes. Try it right now for free and get your perfect candidate before they go somewhere else. Go to ZipRecruiter.com/snap. That's ZipRecruiter.com/snap. Again, ZipRecruiter.com/snap. Snap Judgment is supported by Casper, an online retailer of premium mattresses for a fraction of the regular price. Casper offers an obsessively engineered mattress at a shockingly fair price. Our own Anna Adlerstein loves hers. Risk-free trial and return policy. Try sleeping on Casper for 100 days with free delivery and painless returns. The mattresses are made right here in the U.S. of A. And snappers get a $50 discount off any mattress purchased by visiting casper.com/snap and using the promo code SNAP at checkout. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey, thanks for listening to Snap. Did you know that Amy Poehler is a self-proclaimed snoop who reads people's journals? Or that John Waters was a judge at the porn Oscars? Well, you would if you listened to Fresh Air with Terry Gross. On Fresh Air, you'll hear surprising stories from the artists, authors, and journalists that you know, and discover new ones. You can find Fresh Air's podcast at npr.org/podcasts and on the NPR One app.
Welcome back to Snap Judgment Live, the breakout special, already in progress.
Now then, you have heard from the cool kids. Now it's time to bring out a nerd. It is my distinct pleasure to introduce a veteran to the Snap Judgment stage, Miss Daya Lakshmi Narayanan.
When Bill Clinton was elected president, I was elated. I just had to meet him. You see, I'm kind of a political nerd, you know? When the girls at the salon are reading like Cosmo, Glamour, People, Us, you know, magazines that give you bad body image, I want to read a magazine that makes me feel good about my body. Like The Economist. 2 months ago, Kim Jong-un was on the cover. My bad hair day, not so bad. I follow elections like other people follow, what is that thing with the ball and the running and they hate women and gay people? Oh, football, yes, that's it. I follow elections like that. And Bill Clinton was the ultimate nerd, a Rhodes Scholar who could talk budget numbers. And he also connected with human beings. And like a true nerd, he chose a robot as his vice president. One day, my friend and I heard that Bill Clinton was coming to a local public school as part of his re-election campaign stop. So we camped out, and then we rushed into the gymnasium. Bill Clinton had finished speaking about what, I don't know, but he was coming down the rope line to shake hands with people. He was connecting with each individual like they were the only person in the room. Some people asked about foreign policy. Some people just wanted to offer support. But I would be different. I would connect with him nerd to nerd. And I would say something brilliant. He comes by and I see him. I stick out my hand and right then I'm feeling a little lightheaded. I hadn't eaten all day. My stomach growls and I say, Mr. President, what's your favorite junk food? I blew it. But I look over at him and it looks like he might look at me and say something. I take a deep breath and just at that moment, some jerk behind me pushes me so he can get in there. And what happens next is, keep in mind, I'm 5 feet tall and this is big Bill Clinton. So he pushes me and I kind of end up in Bill Clinton's cleavage like this. And I'm kind of jammed in there. But Bill Clinton, you know, like he's the master politician. Like even if there's a little Indian wedged in his cleavage, he's been to India, he's immune. So he kind of keeps shaking hands with people with me in his cleavage. And the Secret Service is all like, is she trying to smuggle herself into his shirt? I kind of wriggle myself out and I go to the back to join my friend. And he's like, what the hell was that, weirdo? I was like, I was nervous. I don't know what happened. He goes, well, did he smell good at least? I don't know what he smelled like. I was gasping for air. I was humiliated, but not defeated. Bill Clinton continued to inspire me. So many, many years later, I got an awesome job. A job where I was working for a very wealthy man. Let's just call him FBG, famous business guy. FBG had so much money, he lived in Nevada to avoid state income tax. But he wanted to give all his money away. And I was helping him with that. It was perfect. I got to nerd out about social responsibility and investing and give away money that wasn't mine. The best job ever. One day, my boss, FBG, approaches me and he's like, Daya, I'm going to need for you to go out of state on a trip. And I was like, oh, okay, cool. What is it? He's like, well, Bad news, it's in Little Rock, Arkansas, but good news, it's at the Clinton Library. A reception follows after, and you get to be my representative. And I was like, cool. So I arrived at the William Jefferson Clinton Presidential Library. The after party is amazing. There's dignitaries all around, senators, governors, people in outfits that I've never seen before from the UN. And I am strategically placed by the food table. I am eating mini quiches and micro cream puffs. Just then, I feel a presence in the room. People rise to their feet. Applause. People are going crazy. It's Bill Clinton. And this is post-surgery Bill Clinton. So he's a little skinnier and a little tired, but the magic is still there. I would now meet Bill Clinton. It was destiny. I had also eaten, so I wouldn't say anything stupid. My turn was next. Hello, Mr. President. I'm Daya Lakshminarayanan, and I'm here representing FBG, your friend. He told me to say hello. Bill Clinton looked at me, and he goes, "Yeah, okay." And he walked away. Yeah, okay. Man, skinny Bill Clinton was no fun. Well, I missed my chance. So I went back to work, filed my report via email to minimize human contact. And a couple weeks later, I go on vacation. Well, it wasn't vacation. It was a bachelorette party. And the bachelorette, she just wanted us to fly to Vegas, spend a lot of money, and be wild girls. And I was like, wild girls? And she goes, yeah, just like wear your sexiest, smallest, like craziest little dress. And I have these like little lacy collars that you can wear. They're gonna be so cute. They look like poodle dog collars. Yeah, she was annoying. That's why she's not my friend anymore. But I show up at, you know, this hotel in Vegas at the Palms, and we kind of shimmy over to the bar like we're Jack A. Harry from 227. We sit down at the bar with our drinks. The bartender's like, over here, that's Dennis Rodman. Over there, Vince Neil. And way back there, that long table set for 20, Bill Clinton is about to walk in. Oh, cool. That's awesome. You know what's funny? My boss, FBG, lives in Nevada, and he knows Bill. Wouldn't it be funny if then all of a sudden, I feel a presence. People start standing up. The guys behind the glass wall of the cigar bar start banging on the glass. People are applauding and going crazy. Bill Clinton walks in. And with him is my boss. He looks right at me and goes, Daya? And ladies in this room, I don't know if you've ever had the experience where you're wearing a skimpy, sexy dress and you have to simultaneously pull it up and pull it down. And I have this weird collar thing, necklace, that I'm trying to hide with my hair, so I look kind of Amish. And I walk over. Hi, great to see you here. I'm with some of my friends, and I turn around, and they're like, woohoo, girls, wow, Cosmos. She's actually a very successful software engineer. And then my boss points to Bill Clinton and says, Daya, have you met President Clinton? I know my face is brown, but it feels red right now. I kind of look at the floor, but then I feel he's looking down at me. I look up, our eyes connect. We make a deep connection. And I say, Mr. President, my friend is getting married, and I'm here for a bachelorette party. And he goes, Daya, don't do anything I wouldn't do. My boss looks over at me and the outfit that I'm wearing, and that's the last time he would ever make eye contact with me again.
Understand this, that story, along with every story you hear on this show, is available at snapjudgment.org. The video, film, amazing live version. See it. Go down. Don't go anywhere. Snap Judgment. The live episode will continue in just a moment. Stay tuned.
Daya Lakshmi Narayanan.
Hey, Snap Nation. If you've enjoyed listening to this podcast, it's thanks in part to Cleveland Clinic, where last year over 94,000 people traveled for healthcare from around the world. For over 90 years, patients and families have turned to Cleveland Clinic for quality medical advice and treatment. Connect with world-renowned physicians to get a second opinion. Learn more at clevelandclinic.org/care. Same-day appointments are available. Cleveland Clinic, because every life deserves world-class care.
Hey, thanks for listening to Snap Judgment. Be sure to check out Fresh Air with Terry Gross. On Fresh Air, you'll hear surprising stories from the artists, authors, and journalists that you know, and discover new ones. You can find Fresh Air's podcast at npr.org/podcasts and on the NPR One app.
From PRX and NPR, you're listening to Snap Judgment Live, the Breakout Special. My name is Glenn Washington, and this next story does mention a house of ill repute. You should know that. Just in case you care, I'm jealous of you regardless, because Snap is about to drop a bomb.
Here at the Snap, we call up a closer. Please put your hands together for Mr. James Judd.
Well, nobody said don't come on stage with a martini and a tambourine. The late 1990s, like the year 2000, the height of the first great dot-com boom, and San Francisco was its epicenter. So I thought, I've got to get in on this. People were becoming millionaires overnight. Money was just falling from the sky. People were going to work in their pajamas. They were bringing their dogs. They were playing ping pong. It was an amazing time like we'll never experience again, except for like right now. So I thought, I got to get in on this. But what can I do? Well, I look in the want ads, and I find an ad for this big fancy technology magazine that's looking for someone with legal and technology knowledge. I think, well, this is perfect. I have some legal knowledge, and I use technology, so how hard can it be to write about it? I send in my resume, and immediately the editor-in-chief calls me in, and he looks at my resume and he says, well, this is a very impressive resume, but I don't actually see here that you have any experience in the technology sector. We're the biggest technology magazine out there. We cover all the major players and issues. Do you know anything about technology? And I say, no. He said, well, can you start Tuesday? And just like that, I'm hired. And they start sending me out immediately in all these exotic places like Cupertino and Los Gatos, the cat, and the Milpitas and Fremont. It's very exotic, and I'm loving it. And one day, my boss says, pack your bags, you're going to China. Well, there's one little twist to the story. A couple days earlier, this spy plane was forced to land off the coast of China. Anyone remember that? So the Chinese government has said there's going to be no more visas for U.S. journalists. It's not going to happen, no way, no how. So my boss wants me to sneak into China as a tourist, interview these five guys he's got picked out, and get home without getting caught. Well, it seems like kind of a bad time to be trying to pull a fast one on the Chinese government. But you know what? I weigh my options. I think, well, I could refuse to go on moral grounds, but possibly lose my job and lose my house and lose my boyfriend. Or I could go to China and risk getting caught, and I wind up in a Chinese prison, and I wake up one day missing my kidneys. I'm going to China! And I'm going to go because I'm going to be there on my 36th birthday, and I think it will be great. Great luck to celebrate my 36th birthday by standing on the Great Wall of China. At least this is what I tell the people at the embassy near the Kabuki Hot Springs, which, by the way, is fabulous. You should definitely go there if you can. And, they kind of have a little qualm, but then they stamp my passport and I'm off. And I get on the plane, then I fade to black. And when I wake, I'm in China. Well, I put on my blue pinstripe suit, I put on my red tie, my shiny black shoes, I rush out of the hotel to find a limousine waiting for me. And next to the limousine is a very tall guy in a black hat, mirrored sunglasses, black tie, black suit. He says, "Call me Mr. Gu." And I get into the back of the limousine, and the five guys I've come to interview are already seated around this limousine. We're going to drive around Beijing because they don't want to be seen with a U.S. journalist. Now, these five guys were all born in China, but they were educated in the United States, and they made millions of dollars on Wall Street, maybe billions of dollars. And now, they've all moved back to China, where together, they have a plan to make China the leader in the world's technology race. And they're talking about, I don't know. But here's what I do. When I don't know what people are saying, which is most of the time, I don't know what these people are talking about. I mean, I can't even spell the words that are coming out of their mouths. I bring out a little tape recorder and I say, "I'm not going to take notes. Instead, I'm here to listen to you." So we're driving around Beijing and all of a sudden somebody pulls out a bottle of mysterious Chinese liquor and everyone goes, "Hooray!" And then shot glasses come out and they pass it around the limousine and everyone goes, "Hooray!" And I take a sip of it. It tastes like a combination of black licorice and gasoline. I dub it Licoline. And it goes around and around and around and everyone goes, "Hooray!" And pretty soon everyone is really drunk. And then one of the guys turns to one of the other guys and goes, "Hey, why don't we take James with us and show him how deals are really closed in China?" And Mr. Gu speeds up. And when we stop and we step out, we're in the shadow of a giant neon hula girl. And her eyes are blinking and her hips are shaking. And she's playing the ukulele beneath two giant, pink, blinking, naked breasts. And I think, okay, well, a night of giant, naked breasts would be my second choice. Well, somebody rings the doorbell. And a woman with a beehive and a riding crop answers the door, and she goes, "Hooray!" And all the guys go, "Hooray!" Well, Madam Riding Crop leads us through a maze of corridors, of doors with little windows. And finally, she opens the door, and we step inside one of them. And it's kind of a small room with green shag carpeting and wood paneling, a couch, a coffee table, and a TV set. And we stand there awkwardly in silence for a few moments. And then Mr. Gu opens the door, and in marches a line of girls. And they're all kind of tall, and they have big hair and like sparkly tube tops and those very shiny, too much information Celine Dion pants. Except for one small girl at the end in a black cocktail dress and a side pony, really very chic. And one of the guys turns to me and he says, "Pick one." I say, "Oh, no." "I'm here to listen to you." He says, "Custom dictates that you've got to choose before we can choose, so you got to pick one." All the guys start going, "Pick one, pick one, pick one, pick one, pick one." I think, "Hey, her." And I point to the girl at the end in a little black cocktail dress, because I think that'll look the nicest next to my blue pinstripe suit. And she comes over and she says, "My name is Lisa, but I know it's the only thing she can say in English." And all the guys go, "Hooray!" And they pit the girls and everyone goes, "Hooray!" And then we all sit on the couch and Madame Roddy Crop brings out another bottle of Licorline. Everyone goes, "Hooray!" And pretty soon everyone is taking shots of Licorline and singing Desperado. That TV comes to life as a karaoke machine. The guys start getting up and singing. Well, first of all, conversation between me and Lisa is strained at best. And my little laminated Chinese handy expressions card in my wallet doesn't include anything I care about, like, is it hard to find good skincare products in China? Or do you have a brother nearby? Awkward. Well, Madame Roddy Crop takes a couple at the end of the couch, and she leaves them out. They're gone for about a half an hour. And they come back. No one says a word about it. Then she takes the next couple, and they leave. And the next one. Until pretty soon, Lisa and I are the last ones left in line. Well, I see Madame Roddy Crop coming toward me. And she's got that look in her eye. Like, okay, gringo, it's your turn to see the big round bed in the back. I panic. I get up. I grab the microphone from whoever has it. I say, "Ha! It's my turn to sing." And I press through the list of songs. I press play. If I could turn back time, Chastity. Now, Lisa has an expression on her face that needs no translation. Because that expression means the same thing in every language of every country on the planet. There is something just not right about this guy. Am I gonna get a tip? Well, Madame Riding Crop keeps coming toward me, and now I'm really panicked. But suddenly, just as she approaches me, one of the guys gets up and he whispers something in her ear, and she claps her hands, and all the girls, including Lisa, get up and they run out of the room. And one of the guys turns to me and he says, "We've got a surprise for you." Okay, so here's the funny thing about me. I am normally not the type of person who was ever at a loss for words. But usually it happens whenever I'm in the presence of my four Mormon aunts from Utah. Now, all the people on my father's side of the family are Mormon. And they all live in Utah, and they are deeply devout Mormons and deeply devout Republicans. I am not. So we've always had a very cordial, never seen, speaking, or referring to each other sort of relations. But once a year, all the aunts will fly in from Utah to go shopping, usually at Christmas. And somehow, I get roped into taking them around. I take them around Union Square, and then I take them to the Cheesecake Factory. Mormons love the Cheesecake Factory. And I look up, and Aunt Mimi, the most religious and politically fanatic of the group, is giving me this look. What? I just feel really bad for you. Why? Because of your lifestyle. Because of your lifestyle, you will never get to experience God's greatest miracle to heterosexuals. I said, "What are you talking about? I'm in the Cheesecake Factory, aren't I? When are you gonna have a baby?" I don't know what to say anymore. I don't know what to say. I mean, how many times can you answer the same question over and over and over again? I wish I had some sort of saucy, snappy comeback. Something Noel Coward or Oscar Wilde or even Charles Nelson Reilly. Something like, "I guess when my boyfriend grows a giant vagina." And Mimi says, "Don't you and your Spanish friend want to raise a child?" Now, my Spanish friend is Eric, my then California State Registered Domestic Partner of many, many years, and now my legally wedded spouse. And of course, they know it. Oh, thank you. Oh, my gosh. Hey, listen, if you want to get us a gift, we're still registered on Craigslist. And Eric is a native of Puerto Rico and a native Spanish speaker, and they all know it because we've been together now, like, 10 years or, well, 10 or 12 years, depending on how you do the math, because I stalked him for 2 years, so he's been with me for 10, I've been with him for 12. And the fact is, no, I don't want a baby. Look, if I wanted a baby, I'd get a baby. Being gay has never been any barrier to getting a child. Are you kidding me? If I had a dollar for every single woman over 35 that tried to get sperm out of me to make a baby, I'd have $3. I can't go. Eric and I would consider adopting an older child, but only if he or she completed some sort of course in bookkeeping. We have troubles with our taxes, but I digress. Back at the whorehouse. Madam Ronnie Crop is coming toward me. And she got that look that says, you're ready to see the big round bed in the back? And I'm starting to panic. I think, what am I going to do? I got to get out of this. And then one of the guys gets up and he whispers something in her ears and she claps her hands and all the girls, including Lisa, get up and they run out of the room. And I think, and the guy turns to me and he says, we've got a surprise for you. I think I'm trapped. What am I going to do? Even if I get out of here, I don't know where I'm basing. It's panic. And just before I get up and I make a break for it, the door flies open. But instead of the Red Army, in marches Mr. Goo. And behind him come each of the girls. And they're waving lighted sparklers in their hands. And behind him comes Madam Ronnie Crop. And she's got a birthday cake that says, Happy Birthday, James, in Chinese and English. And the 5 Chinese billionaires, the 6 Chinese hookers, the 1 madam with a rotting crop, and Mr. Goo sing happy birthday to me at 3 a.m. inside of a Beijing whorehouse. So tell me, how can the Great Wall of China top that?
Snap Judgment Live, the breakout special. See it for yourself right now. Watch and share these stories with your world for free. SnapJudgment.org. Subscribe to the free podcast while you're there. And all the music for this show, including this music, was composed by the amazingly magical Alex Mandel. Performed by Alex and the Snap players Tim Frick and Dangerous David Brand. Thanks as well to Anna Adlerstein, Jasmine Aguilera, David Kim, Matt Ducat, our old mixologist, Pat Macedi Miller. Show some love for the Uber producer, Mark Richards, because even though this is not the news, no way is this the news. This is NPR.